And he just did brilliant. So, like, yeah, hats off.
Wouldn't be like us as Irish people to be getting ahead of ourselves anyway. Oh,
you buy the lotto ticket, you think you won.
I know, we're putting the World Cup in our hands. We're giving Josh World Player of the Year. So we probably need to calm down. Yeah. In fairness to us.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.
Hello and welcome back to House of Rugby together with Bank of Ireland. I'm Greg O'Shea, and as always, I'm joined by the lovely Lindsay Pete. And also today we have a Sharks and Ulster legend, Louis Ludic, is in the room. How are you guys?
We're great.
Cuia mora.
Cuia mora.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Louis was teaching us a bit of Afrikaans beforehand. Do you want to say it there, Lindsay?
Cuia mora. To Louis and to everyone watching. So that's Afrikaans for good morning.
Yeah, we have a couple of Afrikaans supporters actually. So hopefully you said it right. We don't get abused in the comments.
No, but I think we're going to get abused from our discussion, which will take place probably for the big match over the weekend. But we leave that. So hopefully no one will be offended. But listen, yeah, we're amongst friends now this morning. So
exactly.
Looking forward to it.
But before we figure out what's going on in Louis' life, how was your weekend, Lindsay?
I had a cracking weekend. Yeah. Well, I'm a bit sore. We had a Dublin 4 derby against Old Belvedere, which came out 15-11 winners.
Oh, tight match. Finally, you had good stuff with some manners on you.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, one of those mornings where you kind of roll and you're like a surfboard, you roll out of the bed. I've had that the last two mornings. But nice. Good LD4 battle and we came out the right side of it.
Good stuff.
It was my 42nd birthday on Saturday.
No way. Happy belated birthday.
Thank you very
I'm so
much.
Sorry I didn't text you on the
don't
day.
Don't be worrying, honey. Don't be worrying.
Did you have cake and everything?
Lemon drizzle for breakfast. The only time you don't feel guilty when you have cake for your breakfast. So, yeah, listen, I was spoiled rotten and... I'd take away and watch the men's game then after and an Ireland win. So all I wanted was obviously celebrated. My son shared me. It was more so his birthday. You know, that's the way it is with kids. and then a railway win and an Ireland win. So it was a great weekend.
Lovely weekend. Wow, if I'm in half as good a shape as you are when I'm 42, I'll be a lucky man. And Louis Ludic, you are a legend of the game in your own right. You played 70 times in Super Rugby, which is one of the toughest competitions to play in. You played for the Sharks. And then you came up to Agen for a while before hopping up north in Ireland, and you played for Ulster for two seasons. So how have you been?
I've been good, thank you. Yeah, it's being retired is a little bit different than playing, but I'm really enjoying Ireland. So it's been good. It's been really, really good.
Yeah, you retired just last year, right?
Yeah.
And you've been finding it hard to kind of transition into normal life, or are you loving it?
Yeah, it was quite different. So the door was quite shut for me. Mm-hmm. So in November 2020, I got a bad concussion. So got knocked out and I was still contracted until June. So I really struggled to get back and was training with the team and just got headaches. And one, I was meant to play and did a bit of contact in the warm-up. And the doctor said, called me in on the Monday and said, listen, it's better just to call it a day. It's no use. You're getting a bit older, so but also like it's not worth it to keep on pushing yourself and not your health exactly. So he just said, listen, let's just call it a day. And it was quite nice from also that was in March 21, but my contract ran until June. Yeah. But then they said, listen, just we know you have a business, go and do that. You can come in whenever you want, but go and do your thing. And yeah, I just jumped straight into business. So it was the one day I was a professional rugby player. The next day I jumped right into the business. So it was just flat out from the beginning. So I think that definitely helped me massively.
Yeah.
That's so lovely support, isn't it?
That is unbelievable. Yeah. So I was wrong. You actually had seven seasons with Ulster, not two.
Seven.
Yes.
From 2013, was it? You went to France?
Yeah. Went to France 2013 and then 2014 I came over.
And did you just have the 1 year contract in France or you just...
No, it was a bit of a story. So
of course, I would unearth the story.
I signed for 3 years actually. And while I was there, Ruan Pienaar phoned me, and I don't know if you remember Stuart Hogg. There was a big thing about Ulster. Stuart Hogg was meant to come, and there was contract issues with him. And Ruan said, listen, Ulster's looking for a fullback. It's a big maybe, but are you available? I'm like, not really, but we'll see how it goes. And we were pro de deux. So whenever I signed for Agen, they were top 14. And then I went there they got demoted and then I went there anyway. So, but I had a clause in my contract. If we don't go up again,
I could come out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good
so,
class.
And then great we played, class. We played against La Rochelle in the final for the Pro de Deux. That was a Sunday. And I got the contract on Monday. And as it works in France, everything goes through the postal system. So you need to write a letter of resignation.
Yeah.
So, and I think the Friday was a holiday. So it was meant to go out on the Wednesday for them to receive it on the Thursday to make it legal. So that's when the cutoff date was. So I had a day to make a decision.
To write your letter.
Yeah. Wow. So like to make that decision of, am I going, what am I doing? Yeah. So then it was tough because like France is amazing, the food and the drink. And the weather, let's be honest. So we...
They're also much more chilled over in France, aren't they?
Yeah.
In relation to training and stuff.
It's... their stories, it's way more relaxed, especially Pro Dada. It's very relaxed. But I was a bit young. I think I was 26, 27. So I was a bit young to play there. I really wanted to play still top rugby. So... Whenever I spoke to Ruan and said, I'm definitely going to come and you want to play. And Ulster has such a good reputation all around the world. And so many guys, South Africans played for Ulster, so which helped. So made the decision and haven't looked back since.
Yeah, you're happy with the decision anyway. You had a good few seasons at Ulster.
Yeah, really enjoyed it, yeah.
Unfortunately, you had to retire now due to concussion. Would you say that was the main reason why you had to? Mm. That is obviously a very prevalent thing at the moment in rugby, and I don't know if we really want to delve into it this early in the podcast. It's fairly deep, but what would your opinion be on the concussion and where it is at the moment in world rugby?
Yeah, it's a very difficult one because, like, we all love playing. We love the contact, like, especially us South Africans. Like, we love the contact area, especially myself. I put my heads in places I should not have. And that's why I had probably a few concussions. But you love the game and it's part of it. So you sign up for it and we love it dearly. So you can't really change the physical side of things. And I know the World Rugby, they're trying to protect players, which is great. But, like, it's so quick. Like, because whenever I had my knock, it wasn't bad technique or anything. My head was on the wrong side of the tackle, but it happened so quickly. You can't really adjust.
It was
a guy broke the line and I went in and I actually thought he was going to step inside me, but he didn't. He just ran straight. So instead of my head being on the left, it was on the right and his knee knocked me. So, but those things happen and it's great that World Rugby, all they can do is try and protect and with laws, etc. So, which is great to see. And especially provinces and clubs, they try and help. And like whenever you get knocked, I think now they've changed it from 6 days to 50. Like there's a few days extended, the international.
Yeah.
So, which is great. Yeah. I think that is what you want to see and to protect players. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, it is. It's a crazy area. And as you said, there's just the nature of the game. Mm-hmm. But it's just becoming more of a worry now. So I don't know if you Lindsay, you've kind of dealt with concussions. But like as you said, you're 42 now.
Yeah.
I think Ryan Jones is in around 42 and he just got diagnosed with early onset dementia. Mm. And it's kind of you're kind of playing a game with your life and gambling with your life. I don't know what you make of it all, Lindsay, really.
Yeah, no, it's hard. Well, I think credit to the medical staff at Ulster for you, because I think that's a big thing we've spoken about before when Jason's been on as well. Like, you know, for players, we want to play. That's the trained athletes we are. And you want to be that mature, responsible adult that makes the right decision on your health. But it's always a conflict between heart and head. So it's testament to medical staff who take that decision out of your hand. And that's what we kind of want more of from World Rugby, that it's not about the money or the product. The players actually are a person behind all this. And there's a life beyond rugby. And that is sacred. And we need to maintain that. So, yeah, like I was guilty. We had a collision of heads at our game, you know, and it was just a split. And, you know, you kind of just want to be that good teammate that says, no, you're grand, you know, get it back up. And then kind of totally the referee said to me, really? And I said, yeah, no, you're right. She needs to come off, you know. So you have to come yourself flicking back in there. Mm. And even myself, I've had huge, like we talk about, you know, killer with Munster in Ireland, you know, having severe neck injuries. But yeah, probably now that I'm a bit older, I'll pick and choose what rooks you go into. You'll pick and choose what tackles, you know. Mm. But you don't want to be so sensible either, because rugby is a game. If you're kind of tentative, you get injured as well. So, like you said, there's always going to be collisions, but I think we just need to, like, we'll talk about the Colby, Steph Detoit tackle on Mack Hansen. And I thought, to be honest, I'm going to say it outright, it was a red for me because of how he landed. Mm. And we do have a responsibility and it's hard, but And we'd two yellow cards for high tackles in the women's semi-final with New Zealand. So we just need to be so strict and consistency on the laws and how we're going to do it. So we can only do so much. We're never going to eradicate it fully, but it's about maintaining it after taking the responsibility away. Medical staff stepping up, as is World Rugby. And again, I think just consistency and just no tolerance policy on bad technique or the Bundy issue that we saw with his ban and stuff like that. So yeah, just ill discipline. And try and eradicate all that we can. So
yeah, Lindsay, what you said there as well is the technique. That is massive, because I don't know the stats, but like so many concussions happen, when mine included, where there was where it was a bit of bad technique. Yeah. Like that's the big thing. And
well, yours was split second. I mean, a man on a break or a player on a break, you just to make that decision.
Exactly. And it's so quick, but that is such a vital thing is for technique. That tackle technique is so, especially for younger players, because that's probably what's going to happen as well. Younger guys are going to play and it's going to become quicker. That's going to become more prevalent. So they like technique for coaches is going to be the most important thing, I think, for rugby going forward.
Definitely.
That's kind of the weird dichotomy of rugby, is that the reason why it's such a cool sport and people love it across the world is that rawness of it, that it's just men and women just running headfirst into each other. And that's why people go to it. That's why I was over in America a couple of weeks ago talking about rugby, and went to an NFL game, and the supporters can't believe that we play it without pads and helmets and stuff. They're just like, is the scrum cap like a helmet? Like, no. Scrum cap's not really doing anything.
Yeah, and you think they'd be more protected with the helmet, and sure they're not.
Like, rugby is, like, if you're looking at it face on, it's barbaric, where it comes back to your points. It has to come down to technique, because I was watching a documentary the other day, the Harlequins documentary on Amazon Prime, and there's a nice stats throughout around concussion, and one of them is around the size of rugby players has increased like fourfold since 1970s, and that's the biggest increase in player size in any sport across the world. We're just getting bigger and stronger, and the impacts are just through the roof, and it has to come down now to coaches, as you said, at grassroots level, to teach kids to be tackling between like ankles and below the chest, or people are going to get knocked out like yourself. And I'm just glad that you're sitting here and you're okay, you're functioning, and you're not like, touch wood, Ryan Jones, who now has a young family, and he's early onset dementia. So it's definitely an area of the game that I'm hopefully is going to improve. But the other thing is, everyone's giving out about World Rugby and the laws and the medical side of it, but they're just doing the best they can with medicine at the time. They're trying to come up with the laws as medicine improves.
Oh, no, 100%.
Do you know what I mean?
So life evolves, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like we're talking about your concussion, but like women's concussion doesn't have a huge depth of research. The shape of our bodies are different, so our technique is going to be hugely different compared to how men tackle because of your shape. Like we've wider hips, we're shorter. A lot of ours is whiplash. A lot of the concussion, it's poor tackle technique. So our evolution as to how we manage concussion on the female side of things is ridiculously different. And the more research is done, and we don't have a lot of research done on only females. There's actually been some mixed gender, which isn't really comparable, because we're just different makeups, you know. There's no sexism comes into it. That's just the harsh facts of it, you know. So I think no one's pointing fingers. I think it's just, as I said, no more than with World Rugby and the medicine, that this consistency into their, I suppose, honouring, you know, players, and, you know, the duty of care to players. So no one can ask, you know, they'll do the best decision it is at the time, and evolve as research comes in, and that, you know, we keep going into that. So no, I think it's always going to be, probably, like you said, it's barbaric, you know, really, that there's not more injuries, you know, like we saw that at the weekend, you know, so many injuries even before halftime, like just two teams going at it, hammer and tongs, and it was just someone going to come out of it. And as a player, you kind of come off going, yeah, you know, I gave it everything, and you know, it's testament to me. So no, I think it's just, look, there's no black and white answer on this. We just have to keep, you know, not shirking any responsibility, and as much as possible have that duty here to people.
100%, yeah. And you mentioned the game there, the big game of the weekend, Ireland against South Africa in Aviva Stadium. We're sorry now, Louis, but it was a great win for Ireland.
Yes, it was. And can I tell you a funny story about my mother, just to break the ice before we get in, right? Etzebeth made his break, you know, for the callback of the kicking at the ruck infringement. And my mom's going, run. And the whole family just whipped their head. And we're like, what? And she goes, for 68 minutes, I've been thinking that Ireland are playing in green, and we're like, oh my God's sake. I know. I was like, and you know, she's not sporty at all. And the fact that she was roaring at the telly, we were so proud of her. And then we're like, oh God, she just made a mess of that. So we're like, fine.
The jerseys were a bit confusing, actually, in fairness. The navy jerseys in Ireland, green for South Africa. But 1916, so the number one team in the world, Ireland, beat the world champion South Africa. It was a good game to just, were you at Italy or did you watch it on TV?
No, watching on TV. That was a brilliant game. Mm. It was, yeah, like you said, it was so competitive and was straight from the beginning. It was just vicious. Like it was just, it was just brilliant. It was 100 miles an hour from the get go. And a lot of talk was about South Africa, like taking this as a, just like a, you know, taking it easy and just, we'll see how it goes, but you could see they wanted this win. Yeah. And especially with someone like Rossi Erasmus, with all that he's done coming back, first game back, like whenever he's there, they play for him. Like, and we'll talk about it probably a little bit later about the comment that
all
he made.
Tweets.
Yeah, the tweets. And like, we can jump into that, but I think it's smart from him because he takes the pressure off the players. And that's a type of person he is. He thinks further than just like, what are people going to say? He doesn't care. Like his players, like there's a lot of stuff that happened in the game and guys that probably would have gotten attention and like question marks, he's taking that away.
Everybody's talking about him
and what he's tweeted about. And that's a smart coach.
But that even pregame he did that. And even Khaleesi and you know, their pre-game kind of build up to it. It was like, oh, Ireland are good. You know, they're number one, New Zealand. So you are right. It's a great leadership skill to actually take that pressure off. And considering their force changes with Willems at 10 and, you know, Colby at fullback, you know, those players, instead of now having the spotlight on them for those positional changes, now, you know, it's all about Razzie. And I think, he's done that post-match as well.
And it also shows, like, he's got the players' backs. Mm-hmm. And that, as a player, that's all you want. You want a coach to be on your side and not just say it, but walk it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And whenever the going gets tough, he steps up and he takes the heat a lot of times. And like, I just think it's clever from him.
You got to respect it. Like, he does what he wants, really, to be honest. And I just want to ask you, Louis, being a South African and obviously a well-established rugby player, Razzie named his team like a week early and he was very exact about what he was doing and what his plan was. What do you think the reason was behind that, to take pressure off players again?
In the Southern Hemisphere, especially in Super Rugby, we always announce the team very early. It's always been like that. Almost on the Tuesday, you know who's playing. Everybody knows who's playing from both sides. So for me, it was quite weird. Even in France, it was literally the day. As a player, you only heard the day before you played. So,
did you?
Yeah, it was bizarre. Yeah. But obviously over here, you know, on Monday, they announce a team, but the public only knows, I think, on a Thursday maybe, or the day before. But like over there, it's always like that. But I think it's also a bit of a tactic, you know, like you never know what he's thought is about behind it. You don't have to. But I think because that's what a lot of times it's the way that it's done in the Southern Hemisphere, they just put it out there and they just focus on the game. They don't want to play that game. So it's just the way that it's normally done.
It's definitely a talking point as well. And another talking point was Chesson Colby just came back from his jaw break and he played four games for Toulon and then they put him straight in at fullback. Mm. What did you make of his selection at fullback? He'd be more so an out-and-out winger, right?
Yeah, definitely more a winger, but he played quite a lot of fullback and he's playing everywhere for Toulon. I think he played out half, he played and played a bit of fullback. So he can play wherever.
Yeah.
And it was quite interesting. I think the fact that obviously Pollard is injured and Damien was the fullback, and I think maybe it's a good time also to trial it because it's worked out previously whenever Damien went into 10. So he's making those trials and tests now. He doesn't have to do that in the World Cup, so he sees like that it's, if it worked or not. And like obviously it didn't work out perfectly, but whenever it's a different game and Colby might have a bit more space and a bit more kicking, you would have thought he would get a bit more ball on fullback, but he didn't.
And would you back Willems at out half? I'd prefer him at fullback personally, but you know more than me.
No, definitely fullback. Yeah, I love him as a player. Like whenever last year he came off the bench a couple of times, like he just,
He's a game changer, isn't he?
And he gives everything. Like he just throws his body into, probably not, that's me also with a concussion, so he needs to watch out. But like he's so passionate and just go for it. So
But he's a baller. He's only 24. Yeah.
That feat is...
It's too structured at 10, I think, for him. He's too tight. He needs to move it to forwards and stuff. For a fullback, he has the free rein to do what he wants.
Yeah, but then you look at McKenzie on Friday night for the All Blacks and he's a ball playing 10 and he's not as orthodox. So like, Like, yeah. I think the team and the game plan has to facilitate the player, and he's very different to Pollard. And I think it was always going to be the battle of the young 10 and the old 10. I didn't think he did too bad, but like the game kind of changed. It had everything. It was broken play. It was a bit more physical. We probably didn't see him, but I think I like your point because it's we've seen now the depth Ireland have, and we'll kind of talk about that as the conversation goes on, which is a positive for us going into next year. But I think, yeah, no more than you guys to test Colby and Willemse at 10 and fullback. Worst case scenario, they can fit in there. Because Willemse, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't even in the World Cup squad the last time. Then with injuries got called in, and players have to be ready. So the same no more than England and Australia. Like the autumn internationals are to blood players in different positions and just take the opportunity and kind of strike this off. Like if it's still a close game, considering you'd force changes, really, to be fair.
And like it's great for competition as well, because when you saw when Willy Larue came on, like he had some game. You could see, like, with him and Pfaff coming on,
they
made
a
huge difference. Like, you just see, like, they just brought a lot of energy, and the game just, like, it changed a little bit. Momentum changed, and they had such a good game. And it's good for that mentality and for the competition within the squad as well. So
Louis, based off that, do you think that next year, less than 12 months away from the World Cup, that a sub out half could be an issue for South Africa if, say, if Andre Pollard gets injured and Willemse is not fully established there, and obviously Elton Jeankees was messing around and he probably won't be back in the squad, and there's just a bit of an issue there. Like Ireland have that kind of problem, but we just have too many second string tens to pick from. Where who do you think would step in if Andre Pollard is not available?
It's a very difficult one, and Pollard is almost the same with Sexton, number one, same probably with, like, Pollard is by far the first choice. So, and especially with the Yankees being out now, it's very tough. So Damien, I think it'd be good for him this autumn series to play a bit of 10. I hope Rassie wouldn't make any changes. I think it'd be good for him to get a bit of experience at 10.
Continuity.
I think it'd be vital for him, but I wouldn't be surprised if they maybe throw Colby in there. You just don't know. But yeah, answer short, I think it can be a problem for South Africa next year if Pollard's not there. Like it might be a problem.
Yeah, well, hopefully not. And anyone looking for some light reading, look up Elton Jeankees and what he did with the nutritionist in South Africa. It's good reading. I won't get into it right now. Let's talk about well, there's a reason why he's not in the team. So talking about the actual game, after 35 minutes it was 3-3. Another who's going to get the first try here, and then we lost three players. We lost Stuart McCluskey. My heart goes out to Stuart McCluskey. Like, he finally got back in. He was playing, I'd say he was the best back at the time. And I think he did his wrist or his shoulder. Hopefully it's not too injured, but you played with him obviously for a few seasons.
I was gutted for him. He played so, I was so happy for him. Like obviously Henshaw pulling out's not always great, but when I saw he's starting, I was so delighted for him, because the last couple of years for Ulster, he's been immense.
He's been sublime,
So he's been consistent. Just unfortunate with the depth that Ireland has. So I was so happy for him, but getting injured, I felt so sorry for him. And he had a, like you said, he was definitely the best back on the pitch
at that time. I actually think that if he'd gone the full game and Ireland getting the win, it would have really stuck his hand up for being in the World Cup squad and being that center, obviously behind Gary and Robbie, like, but
100%.
I feel so bad for him, and I'm hoping now, it hasn't come out in the media yet, I don't think, Pat, but we don't know what the severity of his injury yet.
No, we'll find out probably later on today. It doesn't have an announcement. Yeah, it seems
I think it's shoulder. Well, a couple of different reports.
We'll see. Anyway, Stuart, we hope you're all right, man. And Conor Murray went off. I think he popped his hamstring. Poor fella on his 100 cap. He was gutted going off. Poor fella. How sad would he be getting 100 caps and coming off after 35 minutes? Or do you think he'd be okay with that?
I think, do you know what? The vibe from all the interviews, right, post and pre-match, just gave Conor Murray the dedication he deserved for 100 caps and joining an elite club of what, only five, you know, predecessors, you know, and all-time greats of Irish rugby. So I think he, you know, between his, you know, his teammates, his family, I loved his boots with his family's initials, I think, was on one side, and Joanna, his fiance, was on the other. So I think he got a lot of love, and he was very emotional after the game. And, like he said himself, it was hard in the build up to mark the 100th, you know, cap, which was such a milestone in his career. But I thought he did well. I thought his little snipe, unfortunately, because I was there going, I think he like kind of shit himself going forward with these like big South Africans going on him. And then I was like, oh no, on the replay, yeah. I was like, oh no, yeah, something's groin or his hamstring was after snapping. You could just see his face.
Sniper got him.
I think he did a great job. I can't lie. I think when Gibson Barr came on, it kind of changed the dynamic of what we needed to just speed up the game and really kind of punish the South Africans in broken play. Yeah. But I think Connor, you know, he stood the test of time and he's evolved. And I am good for him, and I'm raging he didn't last. But for the 30 odd minutes that he was on, he was a leader, and he was key to all Ireland did well.
Yeah, I'm delighted for Murray. In fairness to him, I think he got his first cap when he was 22 or something like that, very young. Yeah. And 100 caps later, and he's still at the top of his game. And it's kind of been a roller coaster journey. The media went against him for a while, and then he was captain for the Lions. Then Alan Jones came back. So it's been a mad journey for Murray, and we're just hoping that his hamstring isn't too bad. I think it's his hammy, that he'll be back in for Fiji, Australia, and get ready for the Six Nations test. And also, Munster need him badly. So
no, big time. Well, I would leave him out of Fiji now, to be honest, anyway.
Yeah.
But obviously, we've games coming up, but I would leave him out just to give him that time. Because I think Australia have, you know, they're going to put up a bigger test, well, as big a test now in 2 weeks' time. And obviously they did go down, which we'll cover later on the show, against France. So I think he's a bit like Sexton. We kind of just need to manage him now. So I think he's done what he needs to. And it's
such a kind way of putting it. Manage him because he's getting a bit older.
Well, people say that to me, we're managing your time. I was like, no, I'm going to take opportunity. But no, yeah. I think he's so central. He's so key. Just, like as a leader, I'd say on and off the pitch, he just seems a really good guy. So I think he's central to what Ireland need and to that group of players. So I think no, and I think we just need to take the opportunity against Fiji now to just, you know, blood and give players a lot of time. So
100%,
I think give them the test of time, let everything soak in, and have them back for Australia.
Definitely, I agree with you completely. And we lost a front row friend of yours, Tyke Furlong. He got injured.
I know,
as well.
He was immense. He was immense. He's so central, but I'm going to give a shout out to Finlay Beadlam. I thought he did exceptionally well, because, you know, Marty Moore obviously had a great game coming on. Now, I'll be off the bench on Friday against New Zealand. He got his first try. It's been 7 years since he, you know, put on an Irish jersey. So I probably would have picked him up ball playing kind of toy head. But I thought Finlay came on and he did exceptionally. He was key to a little pop pass for Mac Hansen's try. He got a scrum penalty. So I thought he came on. He worked tirelessly. So I thought that was a good piece of mind, because after Sexton, the conundrum, you know, for Tyhead, who's central to everything we do well, and like, who's going to emulate Tyke Furlong? He just comes along once in a decade, you know. He's just exceptional. Yeah. So I was comforted by that. But obviously, again, I think, you know, we need Tyke.
It's really positive for Ireland, and the fact that we can lose Murray, Furlong and McCluskey and bring on Jimmy O'Brien, who come in at 13, who doesn't really play 13, and still beat the world champions. Like, it's just really, really positive. And what did you make of Jimmy O'Brien's performance at 13?
Nah, I like him. Like, every time he's played full Leinster, he's done incredibly well. Yeah. So, like, I've been watching him for the last couple of months, and he's been really good. I like the way that he plays. He's also, he plays flat out as well. He's not the biggest guy. No. He's got massive heart, and he's got good skill in general. So no, it's always tough, and playing against the big South Africans, he's definitely stepped up, and like, that's a type of debut you want to have, is beating the world champs in Dublin. It must have been very special for him, but he had a really, really good game.
Yeah, it's a crazy story. I actually know Jimmy really well. So he was supposed to start on the right wing for Ireland A. Mm. Then Hinshaw dropped out, so Jimmy got brought up into the Irish team, sitting on the bench. And I know Jimmy, he probably just wouldn't like, oh, I'll get 1 or 2 minutes at the end. He's so chill. Like, he's very horizontally so chill. And then he comes on after like 20 something minutes or 30 minutes, and he plays a 13, which isn't his position. Well, he can play anywhere from 10 to 15, but 13 is such a pivotal position, as you know. Yeah. And then he had a decent game. So I'm buzzing for Jimmy. He obviously got nominated for European Player of the Year last year, so he's been thereabouts playing at top level. But to go in against the world champions at 13 and to win, I just hats off to you, Jimmy.
Can I build on that? Because his final pass to Mac Hansen, right? So any young rugby players who are watching him, right, he stays square. So Colby has to bite in him, and he waits until Colby makes that commitment. Yep. And then he gives that pass to Mac Hansen. Now, people might say, well, that's, you know, exceptional. No, it's not. He could have absolutely crapped himself, given the pass early, and Colby with his speed still would have made that tackle on Mac Hansen.
Yeah.
So even to keep his composure in that, like, pivotal moment to stay square and just wait and be patient and calm, like, I watched, like, just a couple of the highlights over, and I just was like, it's such a small, basic thing. But for any young rugby players... Yeah. Just watch them, because it's key to just those defining moments that we all celebrated like 30 seconds later, if even, you know. And I just thought he was exceptional. Plus his left boot gave a bit of a different dynamic. He got us out of some really pressurised situations, which obviously we normally rely on James Lowe. So to come in, at 30 in our position and in the heat of battle, I'd say he was like, oh.
Yeah, it's all fair.
Yeah.
And I have to agree with you, Lindsay, with that pass throughout this whole weekend, like a lot of times that pass, not being behind, not checking that pass, but being in front, that's a huge thing. Like, especially when the ball's a little bit slippery, it can be quite tough. And a lot of the teams that played really well, that's one thing that I noticed was the ball being in front and the guy running. You don't have to check. You're running onto the ball. It is that thing. It's such a small thing, basic thing, but it is massive. Through this whole weekend, you could see, like, whenever that, especially wing fullback running onto that ball, it makes all the difference. It's a small thing, but you don't really realize how big of a thing in the end it is.
I agree with you. So you're both such rugby nerds. I agree with you so much. Like, the normal kind of folk wouldn't realize how important Jimmy's pass was there, and even Hugo's pass as well, to catch it up behind him from Tyke Byrne, bring him back down and give it to Jimmy. So that just goes down to reps and hours, them guys out in UCD training for Leinster and out in Carlton House training for Ireland, just doing those reps, isn't it?
And especially at bit South Africa, especially that try, bit them a little bit, but especially with the line speed South Africa brought, like the line speed was crazy, but obviously Ireland knew, you guys knew it was coming, because that's the way South Africa's defending, but 9 out of 10 times that worked, like some of those heads, Jesse Creel, Mapimpi,
Hugo Keenan, when the pass is up there, I was like, I would kill you. Like, you're opened right up, and Pimpy just went boom.
But the timing is so good with that mad rush that South Africa's bringing. But with that try of Hansen, someone got caught on the inside, didn't come with, and that was that dog leg that he ran through. It was at Gibson Park.
It was Gibson Park, and he he kind of isolated Kitsoff, and then the type bit in, and you're right. It's just that split moment when, you know, that communication or just that drop in that link.
Yeah.
And to be fair to Gibson Park, he read it well.
No, he did. And like, especially when guys are flying off the line, your timing, you need to hold your feet, you need to be patient, and still being able to, with that skill, to get the ball on the outside it's a lot of reputation, but they did an extremely good job.
Yeah, they definitely did their homework, Andy Farrell and co, because I think very early on in the game, we were up just outside the South African 22 and Murray puts up a box kick and everyone was giving out, what's he doing kicking the ball? But I think it was because, to keep South Africa honest, now they'll have to start thinking, oh, what if they do put it in behind and try and slow down that line speed a little bit. It seemed to have worked. And as you said, it's those margins in international rugby, just getting that pass away, where Ireland before wouldn't have gotten those passes away, and that's why we're losing these games. But you mentioned there Mac Hansen's trying the build up to it with Gibson Park nipping in, even pulling it back further than that. The whole team was nearly involved in it, even further than that again. So Hugo Keenan catches an unbelievable ball, Byrne kicks it with his left foot. Gibson Park chases it. These guys are doing roles that they're not supposed to be doing. Gibson Park goes up and gets it, and then you said Doris jumps on the ball, a ridiculous offload out the back to Van der Fleer through two props hands, then again to Byrne and out the corner. I'm like, these guys are top level players. Like, now, and before, Ireland wouldn't have finished that try.
No, and like, even the confidence of the props, because to be honest, like, when you're kind of programmed to, like, just do your job, and like the fact that, like, Porter had nice hands and again he stayed calm, and Beadlam, like, just turned and a little pop pass, you know, and then Gibson Park again, he patient, because actually that was one thing Ireland Day really got caught with New Zealand coming so hard on the outside for our, like our two line attack. And obviously you guys had read it as well, but you know, Gibson Park waited and he's, you know, prematurely shooting, and that's what caused the dogleg. Do you know? So I just thought Ireland were more composed, they were more efficient in what they did.
Calmer on the ball. Much than calmer. Before,
yeah. And actually I think it was Sinead Cassan wrote about it, like just calm in the chaos. And under that pressure to make those decisions, that's we've seen the reward for that. Because sometimes if you're not training under pressure, you're not acclimatized to make those decisions, you know, mm-hmm. split decisions. So I thought it was a huge difference in Ireland that there was a huge confidence in not only the game plan, but obviously plan B. And they were able to adjust depending on what they saw the defence give them. Mm-hmm. And I thought they took really good mm-hmm. options at times. And look, we'll go into some of the controversy Rassie has brought up, I'm sure. But I think that's just the level of elite sport and two teams, top class teams going at one another, and it's fine margins. But as an entertainment and two teams going at it, and it had everything, injuries, mm-hmm. controversy, I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Well, before we get on to the big decisions in the game, another amazing try was Van de Vlier's. It's obviously a set piece move that they'd practiced 100 times, but Van de Vlier, very intelligent to know where the line was and to get it down. It was a great try, wasn't it?
Yeah, and that was brilliant. You probably know more about mauling than me, but I don't know how he got it down, because he's in the middle of the maul, and to have that vision, like it's just really good, really clever from him to go down and score that try. It was really good. Please, Lindsay, take over.
Like you're right, because when you're in a mall, especially like, so I'd be probably at, you know, as front row, you're kind of coming down as a lifter, so you're kind of protecting. You see nothing. You're just like seeing like.
That's what I was gonna ask you. How much can Josh see there as he's moving forward?
As you're going to the back, you could be guilty of just going with momentum, but the fact that he obviously felt the pressure wheeling. You know what I mean? And that's where you'll see a lot of, say, hookers if they're at the back, or like the likes of Josh, like shearing off, because you don't want to go with the momentum, because obviously the opposition defence will go with him because they have to stay bound. So unless the defence has their head up and they're kind of watching anything coming off, that's a really easy score, and it's a really traditional score you'll see off them all. But the fact that the whole thing, he stayed bound in the middle, you know, he's like nearly like the yolk of an egg gotten there. And like the fact that he obviously was so aware of where he was, what the momentum was, and where the try line was, is testament to just
his intelligence,
the man himself. Yeah. Mm. Again, awareness. One of the calmest. Yeah. Like he's a workhorse thing. He's 16 tackles. He got a try. He was pivotal in a lot of the good things Ireland did well, as he's been doing all year. Surely one of the nominees for World Player of the Year.
I was going to ask you that. Do you think he's put his hand up to be one of the World Player of the Year nominees?
100%. It's about consistency.
Yeah, like there's a couple of guys, and him definitely. I definitely think Odi Sevilla. He's one guy that might be a little bit in front of Josh. Like Josh has been awesome, don't get me wrong. He's been phenomenal, but Odi Sevilla he just brings something different to the game. So I know you're probably a bit more
We're biased.
Odi's been phenomenal, like the difference he makes in every single game, and the leg drive that he brings, and he's maybe for me favorite at the moment, but Josh isn't far behind him.
Well, look, even to have an Irishman up there with some of the world's great, and I agree, Sevilla, he's something different, isn't he? He'll do anything, you know, he's always involved. But I think to the lay person, with not being offense, the fact that Josh got that try down and didn't go out, you know, I think, I don't know how many replays there was to see, was his feet in touch, and you're just looking at all these white boots and you're obviously looking for his red scrum cap, but you're like, I think that's him. And he just did brilliant. So
wouldn't be like it's his Irish people to be getting ahead of ourselves anyway.
You buy the lotto ticket, you think you won.
I know, we're putting the World Cup in our hands, we're giving Josh World Player of the Year, so we probably need to calm down a bit, in fairness. A big talking point in the game is Steph Dutoit and Colby's tackle on Mack Hansen. What you make of it, Louis, as a South African?
Yeah, it's, I definitely think it was, I think both of them were quite lucky.
Yeah.
I think both, like any other day, both of them could have gotten yellow, maybe even red, but at least Colby probably, he was lucky not to get a red, I know he's not driving him down into the ground, but his head is getting contact first.
He should have just brought his legs down.
Yeah. So It should have been a red, I think.
I think by letter of the law, maybe should have been a red. Yeah. But I don't think the intention was there from Colby. No, I don't know him as a person, but I presume he's not trying to flip.
No, not at all. And especially with, whenever we said it's so quick, but also with De Toy lifting him with him, like, I think Colby thought he's stronger than he really was, and he just lifted him up. And, you know, so it happened so quickly. So, and to bring a guy safely down whenever he's lifted that high, it's very difficult. So, but just the intent of lifting the legs and not being horizontal, but vertical and lifting up, that's, you're always going to be in danger. So that's one thing that, like, I don't know if you saw when Brian Obana and they were talking halftime about that, and Brian just thought, no, he feels like yellow was fair, it was fine, but, like, just in the law, I think, like, it was a red. But also for the referees, like, they've got the law in their hands, so he can see if it was what the intent was like. So it's not a bad thing that the refs can decide if they think it's fair to give a red or not. So it's a good thing that they have that leverage a little bit. But I know Brian and Tommy, Tommy, he wasn't very happy about the yellow, him and Zeebs. So, but Ryan, Brian thought a yellow was
everyone
was good
wearing
enough,
their heart in their sleeves. Yeah,
exactly.
But do you think it was red?
I don't know what Louis is kind of touching on there is the refs are allowed to take into account injuries sustained from the incident. They're allowed to take in kind of player reactions around it. I think letter of the law, it's just so dangerous, and we don't want kids seeing that it's okay to put someone near their neck and they're only get a yellow, be back on in 10 minutes. So I think for that reason, they should have just gone red, even though it's such a pivotal decision. But I'm delighted Hansen didn't get injured, and I don't think the intention was there from Colby. And I also think Peter Sefdatois was very lucky that the camera angles didn't really catch him. But that guy's huge. Like, he's obviously helping Colby to flip it, but Colby got done in.
Colby lifts his legs, right, which is fine. But see, you know, as a player, once you lift, like, you're in trouble. You are in trouble. So if he hadn't lifted the legs so high, because naturally the head will go opposite to where the legs are. Do you know, that's just laws of physics. So once you sweep the legs, the player's gone. Just let them down. But see, Sefdatois was there, and he kind of fell on him, and Mac Hansen on his neck, and I was like, Jesus Christ. But, like, we've had Mac on the show. Like, I'd say that fella, it'd take, like, everyone trying to annoy him to actually even get a reaction out of him. Like, he's so chill. So I think he also was good to the players where he didn't milk it. Like, he just got straight back up. But I think I would have seen red. Just, again, that consistency, how he landed on his neck. Sefdatois landed on him. It just was dangerous for me.
Consistency is just, the law has to be consistent.
And the touch judge was trying to communicate with the referee, kind of going, look at the trajectory, like, and I felt he was kind of saying, like, really think about your decision here. Did you see that interaction? I was like, and referee's also not getting this.
And it's also every person's opinion, because I initially thought it was more Peter Steph than Colby.
Yeah.
So, like, whenever he said that and I saw that, just think about it, like, he fell on his head. Yes. So I saw the touchy showing that, the assistant referee showing, he lifted it up, so he was trying to indicate, listen, it's a bit more than a yellow. Yeah. So he was a bit fortunate.
Good luck.
Yeah, it's such a big decision for the ref. I think his name is Nika Amashukeli. He's Georgian ref, and people are giving out on Twitter being like, oh, blatant errors and hometown calls. People realize this guy's Georgian. Where are you getting hometown calls from? Like, but
he's European. So
he's the first tier two referee to come up on. I think it was last year. He's about
he's
a year.
Brilliant.
He is very good.
The whole game, I think, bar the two calls going against South Africa. Yeah. I thought he was really good.
He did okay. Yeah, he did really good. In fairness, it's a tough position to be.
It's a tough game. Like,
it is. So we could talk about this game all day, to be honest, but Louis, what do you think that's going to be like now in the South African camp? The meeting this morning, will Razzie be going through them? Will it be positive? What's it like going forward for the Saffers now?
No, it will definitely be positive. I think they'll take the learnings from it. And just to go back a little bit, they would see, I think we missed three conversions. One penalty, I think. Colby missed three. Mm-hmm. Willemse missed that first penalty. So they would see, we slot those, we win.
Yeah.
So it says they would see a missed touch a couple of times as well. So they would take the positives out of it. There was a lot, they had ample opportunity to win that game. They would see, I would think they would see it that way and just move forward. Like, take what you can from it, take the experience and just move on. Because there was, for South African point of view, there was a lot of positives.
Yeah.
Like, they did really well. It was really close in the end. Small margins, but like, I'm really looking forward to this weekend. France, South Africa. I think it's gonna be an awesome game. And a lot of people were talking about the forwards, and like, Ireland matched South African big forwards, mm-hmm. but a lot of people are saying France, like, that's the team that will, if there's one team that will match the physicality of the South Africans, will be France. And I think that's gonna be, South Africa's gonna challenge that and see how it goes. So I'm really looking forward to that one.
Well, I think the French as well, they can be, as you know, probably like, they're moody. So it depends what France show up. Now, obviously, we saw that dispelled last year with their consistency and their first Grand Slam in, what, 10 years last year. So I think it'll be a great game. But I think, obviously, the South Africans will take great learning. And coming back to your point, it's about creating the opportunities, not necessarily the execution. Like, I'm sure Willemsen and Colby and whoever's taking the conversions this weekend will be just concentrating on the kicking and going over that, because... it's about the opportunity and those, you know, those small margins that went against you. Like, Etzebeth's, like, you know, on that break, he would have scored that try. So that's the difference with it, you know, and it could have been a win for South Africa we're talking about. So I'll be tuning into that game against France. So I think it'll be a humdinger and great learnings for both. And obviously they had a great win over the weekend against Australia. So, but a tough mountain. So
definitely. We'll talk about that Australia-France game in a while. And we'll also talk about the Ireland A game against New Zealand. But first, we actually want to show a little clip we have of our own producer, Pat, spoke with Stephen Ferris, who's a Grand Slam winner in 2009, all with the Irish Rugby Heritage jersey from Canterbury. Take a look at this.
Yeah, like, the unit now... talked about Pete, like, you might as well write him off every week, because he's going to come back firing his own shots and play, and how he does that is by playing really well. And like, I don't know what it is, if it's, you know, just like, when he plays for Munster, he's always been good, but when he plays for Ireland, he's been bloody brilliant. Like, he's been really, really good, and you could arguably say he's been the best, you know, him and Josh Van der Fleer, probably the best two out of that four that you mentioned. I like Jack Conan. I think he's a great footballer. I think he has a place in this Irish side. If I'm picking a Rugby World Cup quarterfinal back row tomorrow, Jack Conan starting number 8, and Josh Van der Fleer and probably Keelan Doris are going to start in that, if everyone's fully fit. I just think with his experience of playing, you know, starting test matches for the British and Irish Lions against South Africa, getting a feel for what they're all about. He's a big, huge man himself. I'd say he's easily got 7-8, maybe even up to 10 kgs on Pete. I could be wrong on that, but I just think he's a much bigger man. But when it comes to set piece, you know, Pete is one of the best in the business on both sides of the ball. And he's an absolute workhorse, and he's a bit of a groundhog as well when he's in the mood. So, it's you know, that's a decision that Andy Farrell's going to make. And thank goodness I don't have to make it. But as you rightly say, Pat, there's four guys there that you can rely on week in and week out. And I feel sorry for any of the other back rows trying to get in, like, because it's a bit of a closed shop at the moment.
What do you think of the stuff that Andy Farrell was talking about, kind of owning this kind of like ranking and stuff like that? And kind of, because it's a thing where in Ireland, like, you're almost, you can't stick your head up too high or else you might get knocked down. Like, you know, is it a thing, you know, like, we learned from that mistake in 2019. We were almost kind of like, didn't want the number one ranking, but maybe he's learned that way. Do you kind of think the comments he's made are kind of, would you kind of agree with some of that stuff, like, that he's recently said?
Yeah, I think some of that stuff filters down into the group, like, and it's more of a psychological thing, that you don't go out onto the training pitch or out onto the pitch on Saturday against South Africa constantly, you know, have it in the back of your head that you're the number one team in the world. Like, that's just come automatically, and it washes straight over you, and you're just fully focused on your job. And I think that's what will happen. Of course it will. But by Andy Farrell coming out and saying that you got to own it, it's just like when the boys go out, they have the backing of the coach who believes that they're the number one side as well. And like when you publicly come out and say that, it's going to filter down. It's going to breed a lot of confidence. And I like that attitude. I like that style. You know, years gone by, when we're sitting in a meeting room in 2012, 13, whatever it was, and we're sitting fourth or fifth in the world, and we're all nudging each other, thinking we're great because we're still behind New Zealand, England, and South Africa. And like
the last one I was going to ask you has nothing got to do with the stuff. It's kind of about your teammates, and we probably covered some of these back in the day when we were kind of doing the book as well together. But who's the kind of funniest teammate you ever had, or the maddest teammate you ever had, and any kind of good stories about them?
Well, Jesus. Well, as you know, like I roomed with Sean O'Brien for an awful lot of my caps, and yeah, Rugby World Cup 2011 was good crack, and we probably created a bond. Like it's, you know, that will probably last forever. Like, you know, over that space of the 8 weeks, really good crack. He's a good lad. He's a friend, and he's somebody that will have your back. But he's also an absolute head case. He's not, as he would say, he's not the full bag of sweets. he I'm coming out of the shower, and the next thing he jumps out of a wardrobe completely naked. Just to scare the living crap out of me. And you get out, you think you're in the room on your own, the next thing he jumps out behind the bed, and he's always trying to have a bit of crack. And something with Sean, he was like, he was always laughing, always had a smile on his face, always trying to bring the best and the same out in you. And he always used to call me Seesaw, like, because 1 minute was up and then 1 minute was down and 1 minute was up. And my wife tells me that he was right. But he was always generally up. And then he could just flick a switch when it came to training, when it came to matches. He'd just get into the zone, and he was an absolute privilege to play alongside. And he certainly brought the best out of me. But the lift didn't go the whole way to the top with Seanie O'Brien.
So yeah, Stephen Ferris has great words to have about Peter Manny there, who had an unreal game on the weekend. I thought he really had that doggedness and that kind of fatherly figure. And obviously it's an unbelievable back row that Farrell can choose from. But the Ireland A game was on the weekend as well, and there's a couple of back rows in there that did well. Timney was there, Prendergast. Do you think anyone put their hand up, Lindsay, to get into the Fiji game this weekend?
Do you know what? I was hoping to see a lot more from the Ireland A back row, because obviously Gavin Coombs is only back from injury, but we've covered his stats with Munster, and I think, you know, his opening couple of games with Ireland has been positive. But I thought, you know, he absolutely was in the wars after. I thought King Prendergast definitely put his hand up for me. I thought he showed great leadership. Nick Timoney had a good few involvements. Now, obviously, when you're looking at Ireland against South Africa, they had 70-plus ruck involvement, so their work rate was ridiculous, amongst the other stats. So I definitely think the two lads, I'd like to see them in against Fiji, to be honest. Who else put up? Thornbury actually had a good game, I thought, at second row. Who else for me? I thought Craig Casey, he did an awful night now, to be honest.
Going up against TJ Perenara, though, like, he's so seasoned. Yeah, well, look, the All Blacks 15 beat Ireland A 47-19. To be honest, now, it was a bit of a spanking, like, it was a bit of a lesson for the boys, which I think would be good for them. Do you think it would be good for them, Louis, or do you think it would be damaging?
Yeah, it's tough. I think it would be disappointing. There's a lot of guys that want to put their hands up, especially if you look at Casey, if you look at Hume, Jacob. There's a bit of experience there, and they want to put their hands up. They would be massively disappointed. So that's one of the games you want to, and especially going into Fiji, they would think they'll maybe get a run in, and having a result like that might make things a little bit more difficult. But like, you want to individually, you want to perform, but also you want to show, like, as a team, you can click and you play well. So it is quite tough. I would love to see Hume get a chance.
He was very disappointed, though. Yeah, he was taken off. Yeah, he looked really dejected. No,
he did. Yeah,
yeah. And I was disappointed
for him.
Yeah.
He did, and then obviously Jacob Stockdale as well. Mm. Like, we seen him on the ball, but he didn't do anything. Whereas
shout out to Jacob. No, first time back in an Irish jersey in what, over a year.
Yeah,
yeah. It's fair play. Good to see him back.
No,
on the pitch.
Big time.
He's been good for Ulster. Like, Like, I know he hasn't scored so many tries, but every time he touches the ball, he's got that, like, you know, that spring back. He's breaking a lot of tackles.
Yeah, he's making gain line.
He's making gain line. Yeah. He's breaking tackles. He's heavily involved. Mm. That left foot of his is massively beneficial. So, like, I think he just needs massive. He needs game time.
Yeah.
He needs game time. He needs confidence because he's a massive confidence player. Yeah. So as soon as he gets back into, I'm sure whenever he gets back and he gets that whole of that, I don't know, 11 jersey, he's gonna put everything into it, and he probably won't want to let it go. So, like, I think he just wants that opportunity.
We should see him against Fiji, though. Would you think?
I think so.
I think he should even be in the squad.
Stockdale will get the call up for a Fiji game, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think there'll be a couple of guys getting a call up and getting some opportunities.
Because I think the two lads did very well, and I don't see them actually being shifted, because Balakun had very few involvements, but when he did, I was impressed with him.
Yeah. Very solid, yeah.
Very, very solid. Made some great defensive reads, and obviously Matt Hansen is Matt Hansen. So I don't see those guys losing their jersey for the Australia game. And obviously Conway's still heavily injured, and James Lowe. So who actually played in the wing? Why is his name eluding me? Munster guy. I thought he did
Shane
very
Daly.
Well.
No.
Calvin Nash, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Calvin
Pat.
Nash did excellent, I thought. I thought he was actually standout for me. Got on very little ball, worked really hard, was involved in everything that we did. Really worked tirelessly in the build-up to Marty Morris try. So I'd like to actually see how he gets on. Not sure he's going to get the nod for Fiji, but actually a man who's gotten so little exposure in Munster and inconsistency, I actually thought he was great now, to be fair to him. It was men against boys, but I thought he really fronted up. And sorry, Calvin, your name was on Timmy's tongue and I just had a block there.
Calvin Nash has definitely had a good few couple of weeks. And
100%.
It's going to be interesting to see who Farrell picks for this upcoming weekend. Yeah,
and it's also, I don't know, he probably would have that team picked, you know,
prior. Wouldn't he? Yeah.
Like, it's probably he would know roughly who he wants to take to the World Cup. He's got a strong idea, and I think he knows who he would like to put into that team and see how they go. Like, I know a lot of guys want to put their hands up, but he would have a rough idea who maybe someone impressed him a little bit and give him that nod, but he would know.
Yeah, sure, you know yourself, Louis. Fellas could be impressing a training that we wouldn't see, and he wants to give him a shot. So can't wait
Crowley
to see that team.
Well.
Crowley as well.
Come on, because Frawley obviously got injured. Frawley took a good try. Now that was the big thing. So a couple of lads, you know, they did well in a very, very tough outing, to be fair. But it was disappointing now overall because, New Zealand targeted the ruck. They really come up high on light spin. And I don't think our guys actually read that. It's, you know, like, we gave a lot of turnover ball by just simple pass and interception. And I just think that's, like, they were naive kind of mistakes now to make. But, you know, that's why Ireland A is there. That's why lads need game time. And it's those... You know, my philosophy on any type of sport is, unfortunately, like, mistakes are the biggest learning curve. And if you're willing to open yourself up and learn from them, then they're good outcomes.
Exactly. Big lesson. And Damon McKenzie and his All Black 15s taught the boys a lesson. Oh, my God. He's unbelievable. We're moving on anyway. France versus Australia was a cracker of a game. In Stade de France, 30 points to 29. Damien Penaud with his try at the end. Did you see it?
Yeah, no, I saw it. I thought it was a bit, it wasn't great defence. Like, there was a couple of it was pretty poor defense, but he is some finisher.
Like, classic into out. Like,
his footwork, the speed.
Yeah, no, he is so quick. Like, he's one of the top wings at the moment. So, no, he's brilliant. But the whole game for me was exactly the same, was so ferocious. Mm. Australia, like, they've got a really young squad, but they can be dark horses for next year. Like,
I think
They've played really well. They were unfortunate a couple of times in the championship against New Zealand. They're playing some good rugby, so it was a cracking game.
Yeah.
It was, and France stayed in the fight with Thomas Ramos, just kept pinging over goals, which is nice for France to have a reliable kicker like that. But I agree with you, Australia, they're doing something nice down there, and they'll definitely be a force to be reckoned with next year in France at the World Cup. So we'll see. And another game that was on in Twickenham. It's hard not to smile at this one, like, but Argentina.
We're so typically Irish, we're like, oh, let's go through this score now.
Argentina on a wet day in London, in southwest London, came and beat England in Twickenham. I couldn't believe it.
16 years in the waiting, congratulations.
Congratulations to the Argentinians. Yeah, they're so passionate. Yeah. Obviously, it's tough for England to take that loss at home by 1 point, but it was a good game. Did you catch it?
Yeah, no, I watched it. Yeah, Argentina was just immense.
They weren't they?
Yeah, they were brilliant. So I was so happy for them. But something's just not clicking for the England team. Like, I know Eddie Jones said, like, it's not far off, but like that the box kicks are just a little bit too far. Mm. Like, it's just a bit too sloppy. Like, everything is just
the timing is off.
It's just everything's just that little bit off, and you can't really put your finger on it.
No.
But like, the Argentinas were just awesome. Like,
they were brilliant. And Botelli, I think, scored 25 of their time.
Emiliano Botelli.
They were just immense, and like skip passes. They look like, you know, we kind of look at these nations that aren't, you know, stereotypically from rugby background, and like Las Piumas, like 16 years in the making, coming to Twickenham and winning finally, and they were well worth it. And I think Michael Checa is a great addition, mm-hmm. and I think he's built on a good couple of wins during their summer series against obviously the big nations in New Zealand and South Africa. And I think, you know, watch the space. I'd like to see them continue that now for the next year and really build on what they've built so far. But again, I think for them it'll be depth of their squad and how quickly they can get that depth up in the next kind of 12 months, to be honest.
Yeah.
And one, Buffelli, whenever you mention him, he's been brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, he's had a couple of great, great seasons. Like, he's up there for me with Penno. He's not the same finisher, but he's just solid. Like, he kicks really well. Yeah. He brings that to the game. But just in general, like, his mentality, his skill in the air, like, he's an all around brilliant player. He's been in great form, so he's a huge asset for them.
Yeah. I thought that as I was watching the game, I was like, Buffelli is such an MVP, like the most valuable player for Argentina. Yeah. Kicks 100%. From everywhere.
Yeah.
So solid, just always does his job. Always does it for Edinburgh as well. Yeah. So I'm hoping he doesn't get injured, because Argentina kind of need him on the wing. Mm.
And that's where we go with the depth. You know, those nations can't afford to lose big players, whereas like we've seen obviously with South Africa and Ireland, we get by because we've such experience everywhere else. You know, you can kind of change your game plan.
Yeah.
So I think Michael Checa, like obviously we've seen him do with Leinster and every other team he's come in. So I think his experience and, you know, pinpointing what he'll need in the next 12 months, you know, and actually when we go on to maybe the women's, we've the turnaround in the Black Ferns in 12 months, it can be done.
Yeah, exactly. And they've a friend of the show, Cantapomi, is in there as well in the coaching staff for Argentina. Mm. So he'll bring a bit of expertise. But I agree with you, just to kind of finish up with the England-Argentina thing. I think the back line's a bit all over the place for England, but I think their forwards are nicely together. Yeah. Sinclair had a great game. Mm. Genge had a great game. Atoje always had a great game. So I think they're just trying to figure out the back line. Yeah. Joe Cocconessingy on the wing, they had Tulangi back in. Anytime he's some way fit, they play him.
Yeah, so he lasted 67. Like, he's a year, hasn't played, and I think he did what he did well. Cocconessingy, he had a dismal like summer series, and he probably is lucky to get back in. And he just fought. He got a great try, big strong man. Yeah. He got over the line. So
I think they just need to figure out their backline. Would you agree, Louis?
Yeah, definitely. I was actually thinking this might be very controversial, and a lot of people probably won't. But I don't know, Marcus Smith. Like, if I don't know if he should put Farrell back at 10. Like, Marcus Smith is a phenomenal talent. Like, he's an individual, he's brilliant. But Farrell just controls the game so well. Like, he's a 10. He's a proper 10, and he's a really good team player. Mm. So for me, like a season or two back, like whenever he controlled the game, they looked much sharper, and that's maybe something that they're just missing. So it might be a bit controversial, but like if they move him back and maybe Slade at 12, like a bit more, that might be something that they're missing. I don't have to make that choice.
I do somewhat agree with you, and to kind of, you could nearly compare that to Joey at 10. We like to see him at 15 and put like a Crowley at 10 for Munster. If you put Farrell at 10 for England and put Marcus at 15, maybe something like that. Eddie Jones, you can have that advice for free from myself. But anyway, moving on in the All Nations series, New Zealand seemed to be backed in flying form. They smashed the Wales in Cardiff, 55-23. Ardie Sevilla was next level, wasn't he, Louis?
Yeah, no, he was phenomenal. But
ball carrying is next. Like, it's incredible.
It's incredible, but also, that ball was very slippery underfoot. You could see there was a lot of handling errors. But one thing for me that New Zealand just brings to the game is their carries. Like, they've got incredible, the ball that they get is so quick, you can't live with it. But they, it's not really like I know a lot of teams focus on placing the ball and that reach and to get quick ball, but they get quick ball by by their footwork, getting over the advantage line, big carries, and then you get the quick ball. So, and then their passing is just phenomenal. It's just on point, in front, exactly where you want it to be. But they just, those basics, call it basics, but it's obviously, it takes skill, but that's what enforces the quick ball and just makes it difficult to catch.
Exactly. Well, a couple of talking points just to kind of run through in that match. Aaron Smith is the most capped All Black ever, beating Dan Carter. I think it's 113 games he has now. Rio Dyer on the wing for Wales, his debut, got a lovely try. They went through like a knife through butter, which was great to see. Rio Dyer, a friend of the show. Alwyn Jones is probably going to have a few words with Tendai Matarrier this morning. Oh my God,
that beast. Was brazen. I was like, oh.
So what he said, so Tendai Matarrier, the beast, went on to Twitter and said, Alwyn Jones, about time to retire. A good dancer knows when to leave the dance floor. I'm sure there's a young Welsh lock waiting for his return in that jersey. Bit disrespectful, in my opinion, Louis. What do you think?
Yeah, it's a bit harsh from the beast. You know, a lot of times as a rugby player, you don't see what that person brings into a squad, what that person brings to. It's not as if Alwyn Jones didn't play well. He's not playing well, but he brings that experience. He brings something different that a young guy might not bring, and he's just not, Bivak might not be completely happy with. So he brings so much experience, and bring him off the bench, there's no issue with that, you know. So like, there's a reason why he's there. So for me, like, that coach, like, it's international rugby. It's not as if it's a club and you're hanging on, you know, it's international rugby. So there's a must be a bigger reason for him to be there.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, just the beast, I wouldn't want people bumping into Alwyn Jones at some game now. Another fixture on the weekend was Scotland versus Fiji. Scotland won 29-12 with a Finn Russell not picked for Scotland team. But Hastings did well, actually got himself a try. So well done to Scotland, keep going. And we're moving on to our Never Stop Competing moment of the week now, partnered with Bank of Ireland. And we're giving it to Jimmy O'Brien, who we mentioned earlier, got called in from the A-team. Played at 13, had an unbelievable game. So shout out to you, Jimmy. Well done, fella. I'm proud of you.
J-O-B.
Yeah, and Women's World Cup, just kind of round it up. We're going into the final this weekend, England v New Zealand. Fill us in what's going on, Lindsay.
Yeah, so anyone who missed it, missed two cracking semi-finals over the weekend. England just got over the line against Canada. Canada did very well, and actually Sarah Hunter spoke after that, you know, for an amateur team who aren't fully professional, they did extremely well. So they won 26-19. Claudia McDonald, who's partner of Cliona Maloney, took the ball. This is like the most unorthodox. You're told never to play the ball from your exit. England took it from the scrum. Claudia McDonald made a break to halfway, hit Abby Dow, and it was like full length.
I saw that try. That was phenomenal. That speed in the end was it was brilliant.
It was ridiculous. Such a good,
For a semi final.
I know. I was like, fear there. Just go. But they're obviously three, and Ellie Kildon was following up. So three Wasps, ex Wasps players. And then, to be honest, the game of the weekend, if you didn't catch it, was New Zealand and France. It ended up 25-24 with Caroline drew on missing a penalty at the end, which she probably was. It's hard right in front of the post, but I was like, oh my God, should you be just there? But Ruby Toohey, did you see her try?
I did.
Kicked through and she had no right to win that ball. Little toe poke and just put it down just with about like maybe a centimetre before she hit the end line. So it's going to be cracking. It's going to be a full Eden Park, I think, for the final. New Zealand against England. New Zealand have won 5 out of the last 6 World Cups, but England are on their 30th consecutive test win.
Sure.
So it is going to be a humdinger this weekend. So get up out of your beds.
Lindsay? Who's your money on?
Do you know what? Really, on paper, England should win, and they probably, with the consistency, deserve it. However, the pressure of living up to that, and then New Zealand coming, like Marcus Smith, Wayne Smith, I beg your pardon, has come in 6 months ago. He's revolutionised the Black Ferns. Some of their skip passing and their passing in general, and just some of their kick throughs, unbelievable. They just want to play rugby at its most flamboyant version. And I think with a home crowd and all the behind them, I actually think New Zealand might pip it, because they're going in as underdogs, really. And I think that's when they're at their most dangerous. But I just wish for just a really cracking match, to be honest. But I think, in my heart, I think New Zealand, I think, will win it this weekend.
Love it. What do you think, Louis?
Yeah, it was two massive games as well. Yeah, it was so intense. I was thinking the same. That pressure of 30 games, that's unbelievable. But like England's got some athletes in that team. Like they are just brilliant. Being at home, New Zealand, you know, like it's
they're a different animal.
It's
aren't
a different
they?
Animal. Yeah. It's very different there. But with that confidence, you just don't know. I think England will take it just because of the confidence and the. I think they just got better players in general than the All Blacks, so the Black Ferns. So I think England will take it.
My head says England, but my heart wants New Zealand to win it at home. Oh, it'd be lovely for those ladies, wouldn't it? Another kind of tip of the hat to the Rugby League World Cup, where Tonga Samoa played in the final, and Tonga won 20-18. But the start of the game, they both did their hakas. I presume they're not called hakas, respectively, but they did it right in front of each other. Look that up on Twitter. It's incredible. And congrats to Tonga getting the win there in the Rugby League World Cup. But unfortunately, guys, that's all we have time for. Lindsay, thanks so much as always.
Thank you.
Louis, thank you very much for coming in. I hope you enjoyed it.
No, I loved it. Thank you very much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
You'll be back.
great to have a South African in. But that's all we have time for today, guys. And of course, a big thank you to Bank of Ireland, our partners and proud supporters of the four Irish provinces. We'll catch you next week, guys. Thanks very much.
Joe presents House of Rugby, together with Bank of Ireland, proud supporter of the four Irish provinces.